assessments. I think the second presentation that we will be looking at is one evidence of that work that we do. Human capital development, we're heavy on that when it comes to biodiversity and conservation and transformation. So we'll also have areas there, areas that are reflected in terms of the targets associated with that. And all our business processes and administration, including finances and operations. Let's move on to the next slide. As the chair indicated, of the 44 targets that we had for the financial year, at the end of quarter four, 39 were achieved, representing 89%. Three were partially achieved, representing 7%. And two out of 44% were off targets. Those are the ones that I'm going to refer to. In actual fact, as the summary provides there, let's move on to the next slide. We've got areas that deal with infrastructure development and maintenance. We've got targets to that effect. Let's move on. We've got areas that also deal with visitors. So the areas that were not achieved, one, in terms of the National Zoological Gardens, as the committee, portfolio committee may know, the zoological gardens are part of the portfolio of SANBI alongside the National Botanical Gardens that I referred to. There was a target that was meant to deliver as part of the annual target for faunal as it relates to animals conservation programs in partnership with others, be it NGOs, be it Pan African Association of Zoos, which we are part of, and aquariums, and other programs associated with how we deal with confiscated animals in support of law enforcement programs, wildlife crime and related aspects. So we couldn't deliver fully on those programs. However, partially those were achieved. We've got the partnership that we have with those that are working with the ground hornbill. Those are birds that are regarded as endangered in some areas, also critical when it comes to the zones and the habitats that they used to be found. And in that case, then we couldn't conclude the programs as envisaged, but a lot of work was done when it comes to framing the MOUs and having the programs on the ground, the breeding programs, the rehabilitation, not rehabilitation, reintroductions that needed to be done, and also programs associated with what we do with FASA, working with other African countries. On the matter related to stud books, if it's not well explained in there, what we do is that we work with other zoos to exchange information on species that will cover the breeding patterns, population longevity, aspects related to the species dynamics of those that we have and what they have, parental lineage that is used to diversify the genetic pool when we work on exchanges as we work together in making sure that zoos contribute to conservation, because they are also meant beyond recreation and education, they are also meant to play their part in research and play their part in science, and also contributing to conservation in one form or another. So six of those stud books that we published were completed, but one could not be completed. Let's move on to the next slide. There are two areas that that are red, not achieved. These are areas that involve learners coming into the gardens. We've got a very big program that targets learners, getting them into gardens, or learners coming in, educators coming in. There was a number in the target, 8,000 reflected there, off target because only 1.9 or 51 were managed to come to our gardens. During the hard lockdown, learners could not even move. Even when the stages were relaxed, it was difficult for learners to move and visit gardens and groupings to come in the manner that they used to come in buses. So that also created a challenge in terms of meeting the target. So we've worked so hard to explore programs that could link up with learners online, but it also has its own limitations depending on whether they have the right gadgets and the systems to be able to access those. So we're finding ways around this matter, but we're impacted by COVID in that form because the education department could not, and even the schools themselves and the districts could not allow and authorize for the learners to be moving in the manner that they used to. So things are changing now. We're picking up on that in this current financial year. That also applied in the next slide to National Zoological Garden. It was also in the next slide, yeah? Yeah, slide number, yeah. So it was also in the gardens that we also had the same challenge. Similar explanation that we can give to that effect. So on that program, because of those two reds and also the areas that we have indicated as partially achieved, that program in particular achieved 50%, 56%. Let's move on to the next program. Partially achieved also on this area. It also interfaces with the second presentation that we're going to be working on or that we're going to be presenting. When it comes to alien invasives or alien and invasive species, SANBI has a role to play, especially when it comes to the science that supports that research and assessments that need to be done. So in this case, we conduct what we call risk analysis, checking on the pathways of those species, the new species that are now being regarded as invasives. How are they invasive? Which areas are they covering? To what extent in terms of the pace? What makes them widespread, and all the information that is required to inform responses, whether responses would come from a regulatory perspective or compliance and enforcement, or could come through operations, and that information is provided by. So we couldn't achieve the 45 that we wanted. We then had to procure and fast track that process of procurement, which could not be for additional support from outside, which could not be concluded by the end of the fourth quarter, unfortunately, because there are certain set of skills that we require for that purpose. So we couldn't easily, or at the end of the financial year, we're not able to conclude that process. So that is one area that at the end, let's move on to the next slide. In the next slide, that program achieved 94% with that area of risk analysis being the one that that brought that 94% because of the partial achievement. The next program, focusing on human capital development, that one achieved 100%. This deals with a number of areas. We support learners, we support young people that need to find experiences in the workplace that come in different forms, whether it's monitors, whether as interns, whether as pioneers, some doing studies through bursaries, that whole process is part of the human capital development, including human capital development associated with other people within who play their part in the sector, educators being part of them, and also involvement with the citizens through citizen science platforms that we have within the context of biodiversity. Let's move on to the next slide. That one achieved 100%. The last program that deals with administration, I think the chair reflected on the BEE related achievements when it comes to risk mitigation, compliance and related issues, our uptime when it comes to ICT. Those are business related processes on the next program, which also achieved 100%. But I would like to go down to, if you go down, Lorato will come in and talk to the financials. There we are. Lorato, if you can just take us through budget and financials and financial performance of the organization. Lorato.
Thank CFO. Thank you, CEO. Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, honorable Deputy Minister, the DGCOs and colleagues. I will go through the financial performance of quarter four. At the end of quarter four, 2020-21, we had achieved total revenue of 606 million against a budget of 603 million. So we had a variance, a positive variance of 2.6 million. Going into the individual items, we had a variance of 1% in relation to the government grant. It was in relation to the EPWP and biosecurity project work that had not been received at that time. At the end, in conclusion of the financial statements, it had to be written off as it was clear that it was no longer going to be received. In relation to projects and donations that are from external funders, we had an additional project which was not included at the initial planning stage. And it was an opportunity that came through during the financial year, and Sunbe took it on. It gave us a positive variance of 2.5 million, and it's in relation to the strategic research infrastructure at the NZG, and it was funded through the NRF. In terms of exchange revenue from our own income that we generate through operations, we had a positive variance of 6.6 million, 15%, mainly as a result of the rental that we receive from tenants, as it performed much better than we had anticipated from the lockdown in relation to COVID. Our admission fees stream as the main source of revenue, it was still performing below expectations. Investment income from funds, it was within the budget. Moving to the next slide, or still on financial performance, we had total spending of 701 million against a budget of 686, giving us a 2% variance of 14 million. The individual items on employee costs, we had a positive variance of 90 million, 17%, mainly as a result of 0% cost of living increases in that financial year. And we had some vacant posts that we could not proceed with filling them due to uncertainties with funding. However, it should be noted that in this current financial year, we have proceeded with filling those critical posts that were vacant. The savings of the 90 million, part of it was utilized towards the next item, where we experienced a negative variance of 29 million, 19%, mainly as we had to cut down on a number of activities as the government grant was reduced. And we also had challenges with generating income from own operations. So part of the savings from employee costs went towards funding those operating expenses. Then depreciation, which is not a cash outflow, we had 33 million spent. It's a systematic recognition of the utilization of assets over their useful life, and that is the portion that would be allocated to the financial year. The capital spending, we spent 43 million, even though we did not have a budget, and we spent out of the funds that were rolled over from the previous financial year. As part of dealing with our funding challenges, we had to convert the capital grant for that financial year into operational grant. So overall, we have a deficit of 95 million against a planned deficit of 82 million. Moving over to financial position on the next slide. Overall, our net total assets and total liabilities have reduced from the previous financial year from 907 million to 824 million. Looking at non-current assets, we had a reduction of 22 million due to the depreciation of existing assets and also recognizing, capitalizing those infrastructure spending. Then current assets reduced by 59 million, and it was in relation to the cash balances as we had to utilize the cash that we brought in from the previous year in relation to externally funded projects and infrastructure. Then non-current liabilities, we had an increase of 5.7 million, mainly in relation to the actuarial valuation that was done on the employee post-retirement medical aid benefits. Then current liabilities as well grew by 8 million due to short-term obligations in relation to externally funded projects. And the accumulated accounting surpluses reduced by 97 million as a result of the deficit that was being experienced. Overall, our total assets of 824 exceed total liabilities of 272, and current assets of 429 exceed current liabilities of 209. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO.
Chairperson, as indicated, overall 89%, with the 7% of work in progress and 4% of areas that were off target. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, DG. Honorable Chair, it's quiet on my side. I don't know whether it's only me.
Honorable Mudise? Dada Mudise? Honorable Mbad? Simbiwe?
We didn't try to call them the MNIC. Just give me a sec.
All right. Okay.
DM, I'm here. Hello?
Yeah, Honorable Simpue, we are looking for the chair. Honorable Mudise, we have just completed our first presentation from Sanbi.
Can Chileta check with him? Because remember I said I'm going to a 10 o'clock meeting, so I'm driving. Then why is there another presentation that needs to be done? Or maybe you thought of maybe we should, members should ask questions, or we present then afterwards they all the presentation, then they ask questions after the presentation.
You will have to lead us, because according to the agenda, there is presentation. I mean, there is questions and discussions after each item. But because of the time and because of the challenge that has been raised by Honorable Mudise, I thought maybe the way you want, because we have three presentations. But it will be easier if you ask questions so that we know that we're finished with that one, we get to the next one, and you must time.
Yeah. Could someone try to get the Honourable DC on the phone and tell him to come back into the meeting?
Yes.
I did, Honourable Paulson. He's going to join the meeting just now. He got cut.
Okay. Thanks, Chilet.
Okay.
But Chilega, how long will it take? Is he joining now? Because I was suggesting that while he's joining,
yes,
he allow the members to ask questions.
Yes.
When he comes back, then he will continue. Because I'm looking at the time; it's going to 10 o'clock. Then they said by 12.
There's load shedding at 12. Yeah, I don't see a problem. Honorable Mata, we can do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Now the members to ask questions.
Chairperson, is there any indication as to when Honourable Madisi is coming in? Because I'm just concerned about us trying to facilitate the question process without a chairperson.
Dalika?
Hi, Honourable Vieba.
Can we maybe just, I know it's going to wait, but we're wasting time. Can we maybe propose a acting chairperson until Mr. Modisa came back? And if we can, because the show have to go on running, can I just propose for temporarily Honourable Dave Bryant to run the chair, please?
I second that.
Chairperson, I really don't mind doing that just for question time if need be.
Yes.
And then when Honourable Modisi comes back in.
Okay, Honourable Brian.
Okay. Do we have any questions for the presenters on the presentation? I don't have the access to the hand function, so if you do have a question, please just raise your voice and speak. Am I taking it that there are no questions from anybody?
I also don't see any hands from my side, Honourable Bryant.
All right, that was a quick question time then. I think perhaps then we could move on to the next presentation and we can hand over then to the DG to take us through. Thank you, the Deputy DG.
Thank you, Honourable Brian.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. It's still Sanbi on the floor. Sanbi, can you take us through the next presentation? CEO?
Thank you very much, Chair. The chairperson of the board had some remarks. Then we move on.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Shoni. I hope everybody can hear me. I'm just going to make some short remarks on the status of the biological invasions in South Africa. And so, Honourable the Deputy Minister, members, and this country, we are absolutely lucky to have a National Biodiversity Institute. SANBI is a very special organisation, and I have to say I'm exceptionally proud to be involved and part of it. And there are very few equivalent bodies in other countries worldwide that are responsible for documenting, monitoring, and advising on the management of that nation's biodiversity at a national level. Sandika is perhaps best known for its beautiful botanical gardens and the zoo, provide recreational and educational opportunities. But that is just the one side of Sandy. Perhaps less well known is the large body of scientific work that Sandy conducts. Sandy is an organization in charge of our national inventory of species, of which there are literally tens of thousands, as well as the national maps of the ecosystem types in the terrestrial, freshwater, equestrian, and marine realms. Citizens use this information closely, and they provide advice on how biodiversity should be managed and conserved for the benefit of all.
Sorry. Can I just ask the presenter, if possible, if you could turn your video off? It is affecting the quality of the call. Thank you.
Sorry, can you not hear me?
It's just a little bit scratchy from your side. If you just turn the video, your video off, I think it might help.
Oh, is my video on? I'm so sorry. I believe it's off. Thank you very much, Honourable Member. So just to say that Sandy brings out our national level reports, and we examine in remarkable, absolutely minute detail, all the dimensions of our biodiversity and the value that our biodiversity brings to our people, and of course, all the challenges that we face. Another national level scientific report is a report on the status of biological invasions and their management in South Africa. And that was launched this year by Minister Kreese. It was launched in May of this year. The NDA spelled out just how important our biodiversity is to our well-being and our economic prosperity by providing ecological infrastructure and ecosystem services in which we all depend. As it will be shown in the presentation that follows, biological invasions erode the flow of vital ecosystem services, and as such, they pose risks to our environment and our prospects for socio-economic development. And quite frankly, as a country, we can't afford this. The report acts as a scorecard of the current status of biological invasions in our country, and it addresses how and at what rate alien species are arriving, which alien species are of particular concern, the extent of which our ecosystems, protected areas, and provinces are invaded, the impacts that these invasions have, and how well we are coping with the problem as a country. South Africa has become a global leader in the science of biological invasions. Through targeted investment in research over several decades, many of our scientists are regarded as world leaders in our field, and our scientists are sought after internationally. These scientists operate from within various national and provincial departments, science councils, and of course our universities. This comprehensive assessment of the status of biological invasions was beyond the capacity of Sandy alone. The scientists from across the country have provided vital inputs, and without their assistance, the status report would have fallen short of expectations. I am not going to continue. I will hand over, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce again our Sandy CEO and the team to introduce the report on the status of biological invasions and their management in South Africa. Over to you, Shawnee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, DG. Our request, Dr. Tsungai Sengenya, who led the program and the assessment working with Dr. Teresa France, to take us through the presentation. Suffice to say, as the chair indicated, that alien invasive species do have social, economic, and also ecological implications or impact, and that will be demonstrated as we move along. And in line with our mandate as SANBI, we are mandated to report regularly, monitor and report regularly on the status of invasive species in the Republic. And we do this every 3 years. This is the second report, as it has been indicated. The earlier one came in, and we're working on the one that's coming. And every year, cycle, as we move along, we're picking up on new things and different areas that we need to place emphasis on, depending on the pathways and the species that are being discovered and how they are becoming invasives and how they are impacting on biodiversity. And also, as I referred to, socioeconomic and also ecological implications. They come in many forms, be it plants, birds, reptiles, amphibians, fish, whether in marine, freshwater. So we will be able to deal with that in a summary that's going to be provided. The full report, the link is provided, and it's available also online in the SANBI website. Dr. Tsungai, Sengenya, if you can take us through.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, honorable members, and all protocol observed. The South African National Biodiversity Institute is mandated through the Biodiversity Act to monitor and report regularly on the status of all listed invasive species and to produce a status report under the NEMBA Alien and Invasive Species Regulations of 2014, as recently updated in 2021. SANBI must also coordinate and implement programs for the prevention, control, or eradication of invasive species. In this regard, SANBI has focused on managing alien species for which the goal is to remove them completely from the country, especially for species listed as Category 1A in the Alien and Species Invasive Species Regulations. SANBI is also planning. SANBI is also playing a critical role in collecting, coordinating, and reviewing evidence in support of listing species, in particular through the development of alien of risk analysis framework, especially for South Africa. Other relevant legislation includes the Conservation of Agricultural Resource Act, commonly known as CARA, which is mandated, which is the mandate of the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. If you can go to the next slide. The report also sits within the context of South Africa's international agreements, in particular the Convention on Biological Diversity Global. In particular, the Convention on Biological Diversity Biodiversity Framework post 2020. We're also working to ensure the report speaks to future targets, in particular the revised 2030 and 2050 targets, which focus on defining and scoring impacts and assessing how effective management is. If you could go to the next slide. Biological invasions are the third largest driver of biodiversity loss in South Africa, as recognized by in the National Biodiversity Assessment. There are a variety of invasive species, and they have a range of impacts that vary from site to site. For example, in mountain catchment areas, pine trees are using up water, increasing the intensity of fires and crowding out biodiversity. And in arid areas, invasive soppy plants are reducing water and affecting livestock. Some invasive plants, such as parthenium, have serious impacts on people's health and similar impacts on livestock. Finally, alien freshwater fishes are invading across South Africa, reducing the diversity of native fishes and other organisms. I've picked these examples to illustrate why that South Africa is a global hotspot of invasive trees and invasive freshwater fishes, but there are many other problematic invasions. We go to the next slide. Fulfilling mandate is all very well, but it doesn't explain why the report is actually needed. So I just wanted to step back and discuss this. In an ideal world, research is conducted that flows into policy. Policies are then implemented through specific interventions. The efficacy of these interventions are then monitored and evaluated. And these findings are then used to improve management and direct research. If you can click. But in the real world, things are more complicated. Different people do different things. Institutions might use different terms and they have different goals. And in many cases, there are simply any linkages there at all. If you can click. This is where the status report comes in. It facilitates the link between foundational research and the monitoring and evaluation of interventions in a manner that assists managers and policymakers. If you can go to the next slide. As per the 2014 regulations, the report are due every 3 years. So the first report was finalized based on data up to end of 2016. The first report was the first such report anywhere in the world. As such, we did not have a format to copy, and the first report was naturally a first attempt. This new report is therefore not simply a new update in terms of numbers, but an upgrade in terms of the processes and the content. Parallel to the report production, the team was also involved in the production of an open access book that provides the first encyclopedic review of the topic for South Africa. It provided much of the basis for engagement with the scientific community. Both reports and the book were produced by the South African National Biodiversity Institute and the DSI NRF Center for Excellence for Invasion Biology. We have also provided a list of key links if you need additional information. If you can go to the next slide. I'll pick two examples just to illustrate the geographical extent of at least two widespread plant species, which we have the honey mesquite and the black wattle. Black wattle trees were introduced from Australia to provide a source of tannins from bark and for wood products. They have extensively invaded the relatively humid parts of South Africa, notably along rivers. They have negative impacts on water resources. Biological control aimed at reducing seed production appears to be increasing in effectiveness, but soil stored seed banks will probably persist for many years. The other example is honey mesquite trees, which were introduced from North and Central America as a source of fodder for livestock in arid areas. They have subsequently invaded extensive areas in the Karoo and arid savanna, where they have negative impact on biodiversity, rangeland condition, and groundwater resources. Although there is some biological control available for this species, it is not effective. Endeavors to mechanically control the species have also not been effective, and it continues to spread. If you can go to the next slide. So what's been done about the problem? The management of invaded sites is carried out by national, provincial and local conservation authorities, and by private landowners, largely using support from the department's environmental programs through the expanded public works program. The clearing work is strategically linked to job creation and poverty alleviation, with the aim of creating a win-win solution for people and the environment. Anecdotal reports backed up by modeling work suggest that significant impacts of clearing are possible, but only less than 2% of invaded land has been addressed. And clearing effort is monitored in terms of factors treated rather than progress towards goals, such as a reduction or reversal in the rates of spread. A major success has been the development of techniques to remove invasive fishes, including bass, bluegill, and carp from stretches of rivers. In each case, there has been significant recovery of native biodiversity. This has created the opportunity to reclaim our native streams and rivers from invasion. If you can go to the next slide. Biological control of invasive alien plants has proved to be highly effective for a few species, with returns on investments exceeding 1,000 rand for every rand invested, and very helpful as complementary approach in combination with mechanical clearing for several others. This picture shows a notable success story where the introduced water lettuce weevil has led to the control of the invasive water lettuce plant. The first picture is before biological control deployment, and the second picture is the result after biocontrol. Such success of biological control were only possible due to detailed research and monitoring. If we can go to the next slide. There are encouraging signs that current regulations are becoming effective. These regulations have been increasingly used to grant permits for the possession and use of listed invasive species in ways that limit the threat they pose. The report documents a case of a successful prosecution of an offender who contravened the regulations by not clearing invaded land. Several other offenses have since been prosecuted successfully. Changes to the regulations and list of invasive species have been made. Their effectiveness will be assessed as part of the upcoming third report. The process has also been set up to ensure that all future changes to the list of invasive species will be informed by a newly standardized formal science based risk analysis process developed by SAMBI. It is expected that the national strategy that is currently under development will provide the interdepartmental vision to address the societal problem and provide justification for government investment. If we can go to the next slide. The development of comprehensive management plans to guide the control of biological invasions is vital for success. Plans need to be in place for pathways of introduction, priority species, and for priority invaded sites. Both NEMBA and its alien and invasive species regulations make a provision for this. Some plans have been developed, for example, on the Polyphagus shuttle borer, but there is a need for improvement and expansion. For example, the process for the formal adaptation of species level control and eradication plans is not clear. One real positive development has been the production of a comprehensive plan to eradicate invasive mice from Gulf Island and Marion Island. Mice kill about 5% of all albatross chicks on Marion each year. If successful, this eradication will be the largest island from which invasive rodents have been eradicated and will be a significant credit to South Africa globally. You can move on to the next slide. The report, we believe, does much to confirm that. In the next coming slides, I'll just try to summarize the key findings from the report. The first one being that biological invasions have had severe impacts on all sectors of society. They are a major threat to South Africa's biodiversity, economy, and sustainable development, but can be dealt with if effective control measures are implemented. The causes, impacts, and how we respond to biological invasions cuts across sectors, such as biodiversity, agriculture, trade, and health. Therefore, it is critical that we have an integrated approach to dealing with these challenges. South Africa is a global leader in understanding and managing biological invasions, but we need to ensure that the capacity is retained for foundational research, for policymaking, for management, and for monitoring and evaluation, so we can deal with current invasions like the Polyphagus shuttle borer and future invasions. We do not know what these are, but we know they are on their way. The report has highlighted key areas that need strengthening in how South Africa responds to biological invasions. This is an area that is constantly evolving, and we need to ensure that the system delivers, and the report plays an important role in helping us determine where there are gaps and where tweaks are needed. If we can move on to the next slide. So some of the key findings, just to summarize, the rate of introduction seems to be slowing down, though there's still significant new introductions. The regulations are currently being enforced. There's lawful intentional import of alien species is regulated. Prosecutions for failing to manage land, invaded land, and permitting processes are in place and functional. There are also several success stories, such as the massive returns on investment from classical biological control of invasive plants, invasive freshwater fish removed from some stretches of river and recovery of native biodiversity. Bold plans to eradicate mice on Marine Island, and South Africa being a global leader in invasion science. If you could move to the next slide. So the next two slides, I also just go through some of the key findings and some of the responses that have been put in place. We've noted that alien species continue to arrive accidentally, but biosecurity capacity and inspections have been increased, and there are major projects to increase this capacity, such as that are being funded through the Global Environmental Facility. Some alien species have significant benefits for some, but damage for others, and these create conflicts of interest. And this negatively impacts the ability to manage uncontested taxa. There is processes in place to increase the evidence base for regulating, and these processes are being improved. And such an improvement will help resolve the future disputes. The control efforts are not keeping pace with invasions in some priority areas. Formal programs to monitor the effectiveness of intervention in terms of outputs and outcomes would allow the efficacy of control to be demonstrated and control measures to be compared and improved. Move on to the next slide. The implementation of control measures currently occurring without guiding documents. A National Invasive Species Strategy and Action Plan is under development, and the policy process has been initiated. These documents will provide interdepartmental vision to address the societal problem. Historical investment in research has provided the necessary foundation for management and policy, but this is under threat. Investment in research foundation will ensure that South Africa can continue to detect and manage future biological invasions and provide the evidence best to discuss conflicts of interest and inform the allocation of limited resources. You can move on to the next slide. I would like to end this presentation by acknowledging the numerous partners involved in developing the report, contributors, and the funders. Thank you. I think that was my last slide.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister DG. That's the report on the state of biological invasion in South Africa as presented. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just check if Honorable Modise is back in the meeting?
Honorable Bryant, I'm back. Thank you very much. Did you hold the fort?
Back to you, sir.
They tried to usurp power again. You must know.
Maybe we should form a coalition. But we can do it that way.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bryant, Honorable Paulson, Honorable Members. That is the presentation from South African Biodiversity Institute. It's now an opportunity for honorable members to ask questions.
Chair, I do have a question.
Honorable Brian, you'll go first. Honorable Kunu, you'll go second. Honorable Phillips, I just saw your hand, you'll go third. Honorable Weber, you'll be fourth. And then Honorable Mbata, you'll be fifth. In that order, honorable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've got a couple of questions. The first one is just in terms of the alien invasive trees, specifically the black wattle. I just want to know if SANBI are investigating potential economic opportunities that can get created by using the byproducts of hacking some of these plants. I know a lot of them can be used for firewood, etc. If they have looked into that in terms of value chain, and also whether or not they're reaching out to get members of the local community involved. I know there are a lot of localized hacking projects within some of our, not only NGOs, but also local community organizations, whether that forms part of the planning going forward. Then I just want to find out whether or not the house crow, I know that is an invasive species, particularly in the Cape and in other parts of the country as well, whether that is on the list of invasive species that is being addressed. And then just as a final point, I noted on the list of thank yous at the end, the Western Cape government has been included. I see the city of Cape Town hasn't been included on that list, although I assume there must be collaboration there, because I do know the city of Cape Town does also have quite an extensive environmental department that's very involved in a lot of the activities that take place and a lot of knowledge. So just ensuring that collaboration is also taking place. Thank you, Chairperson.
Brian, the second speaker.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and greetings to Honourable Members, DM and the Department. On the presentation, Honourable Chair, they spoke about the effects of the black wattle on water resources, and on the other hand, in the presentation, they indicated that some alien species, yes, they are problematic, but they are also beneficiary, benefits some of the environmental matters. Now, my question is, how do we balance this? Because we have an alien species that is in a way problematic when it comes to the sources of water, since we all know that we have a challenge of water resources in South Africa. At the same time, yeah, is the species that we have. Which is useful in a way in different ways, but at the same time it's going to affect or deplete the sources of water. And there's this tree which is also because I thought they are going to mention it, whether they've done the study around it. This tree that is although I can't remember the name well, but in some areas, we call it a gum tree or a tree that produces eucalyptus. Have they studied their effect in terms of their effect on the water resources in the country? Yeah, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mkunu. The next speaker.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to my fellow panelists. I would like to just thank you for the presentation. I just have a question about the reeds that are taking over many of our waterways. I know that they are not actually classified as an alien invasive, but they are invading in a large extent. Years ago, if you drove over a river, you could look down and say, oh, the river's got water in, the river doesn't have water in. Now, mostly when you drive over, you just see them filled with reeds. So I was just wondering, what kind of research being done about that? And are there any actions planned to rid our waterways of these reeds? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Phillips. The next speaker.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I have a couple of questions. Firstly, I agree with Honorable Bryant regarding the economic use of black wattle. But I have a specific question regarding black wattle, as our gentleman, Dr. Zenyegeya, said that black wattle is not a biological agent that is working, but there is actually a biological agent called Dasonura rubiformis, excuse my pronunciation, which kills doesn't kill the black wattle, but it sterilizes it so that there's no cysts and it cannot invade further. Now, I do know that there's SA wattle growers that don't want to allow it, but and they are in permitted areas. So can't we use this biological agent in all the other areas, and we can use this for firewood and for all economic uses, but the black wattle farms is actually for that, so that the spread of this invasive plant doesn't go further. And so that I would like to know about that question. Then I would like to ask specifically if you have worked with CBC, the Center of Biological Control in Rhodes University, as well as the one related to them at Shalati, because they actually have documented successes that they have done through the country in the past 5 years. And unfortunately, the one at Shalati had to be closed down due to funds, and they had to get rid of all that biological agents, which I believe that was not necessarily. And then CBC is probably following them closely. My question is, they have been very successful at the Hyacinthia in both Roodepoort and Northwest and many other dams that has been claimed by this invasive plants. But it keeps on coming, reoccurring, because it doesn't, they're not allowed to do it quite regularly. So my question here is, the Salvina also came now onto Northwest and Roodepoort Dam. And what are we going to do about those invasive plants? Because you also said that part of your off-sandy is to prevent and control and eradicate these plants. But we have biological agents using, and why is this not persistent and just continuously being done at all these dams in South Africa, not only in Gauteng and Northwest? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Weber. The next speaker. Honorable Mbata. Honorable Mbata. She doesn't seem to be in a meeting. I'm not too sure if she is disconnected. Can I then invite Sanbi to respond in the immediate?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We brought in the team of scientists here working with the Kamel. Dr. Tsungai, as he presented, he would respond to some of the questions. John Wilson is also part of the team, and also Dr. Teresa Franz. Kamel, if you can indicate who is taking what.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, Sandy CEO, all protocol observed. We really appreciate all the questions and this opportunity to present the status report to you. I will ask that we start with Dr. John Watson, and he will then be followed by Dr. Singenia. And if there are any other questions, Dr. Franz will come in. Thank you. John, please, will you come in?
Thanks. Yes, and apologies for my voice. Got a bit of a sore throat at the moment. First of all, that question on utilization versus control. It's a really interesting debate and discussion that's going on around the world. And there have been quite a few studies, including some from the CSIR funded by the department, in terms of looking at the utilization specifically of Acacia murrhensii wood. One of the real issues has been the trees which are reducing water or leading to invasions tend to be those at the top of the mountains or in catchments, in riverways, that are very difficult to extract commercially. So you can think of this, the trees that are very easy to use are those that are actually you know, not much of an issue in terms of the impacts and invasions. So they've looked at, there's been a whole series of studies that have looked at trying to get this balance between utilization and control. And in many cases, around the world, the utilization arguments have not succeeded. And there's a few cases where they've really exacerbated things. So an example of Prosopis or mesquite in many other countries in Africa. Initially, at low density, they provide a very useful fodder for livestock in drought conditions. But very quickly, they densify, and then they actually, you know, do what an invasive species does, and reach impenetrable thickets where the cattle can't get to the water, and actually end up, you know, exacerbating the problems. And this has been one of the features, particularly around COPE, where we're very keen to be very cautious about requests to plant invasive trees in areas, or in fact, there was a proposal to plant invasive cacti in several countries. And while there might be short-term gains to a community in a particular point, there'll be longer-term costs, often to communities far away from where the benefits are held. So it's something that has been explored, and unfortunately, those commercial benefits are not. It's difficult to get a win-win in those sorts of circumstances. Sorry. We're very much involved in looking at local organizations, and hack groups have been incredibly important around the country. And there is a standing thing. I mean, a lot of this is about the implementing agencies, the department, rather than us as the scientists looking at what's going on. But biological invasions are an issue for society rather than, you know, any one thing. So it really has to be an issue. And that actually brings us on to crows, which has been a really devastating impact on the local communities who are affected by the house crows. There is, as I understand it, a national strategy in development. I'm not sure who is leading that. I can get details. But there's certainly recognition that, you know, while we control things, invasions around the country, we really do need to have a much more coordinated effort on that. In terms of, yes, I thank the honourable member for the sharp eyes, and apologise for not including City of Cape Town. We've been working with a lot of municipalities around the country, and I'm not quite sure why that logo was missed off. Apologies for that. I think in terms of eucalypts was a very interesting trees, in that in many cases they've got very tiny microscopic seeds that need just the right conditions to germinate. So often they're not invasive. But what they do is they've got very deep root systems. So you can have a small patch of eucalypts on a hillside, and it can radically reduce the amount of water coming off that hillside, though it isn't invasive per se. We are looking into these issues, and we've hopefully got a postdoctoral project looking explicitly into trying to get better on-ground measurements of that reduction in water and how much we can improve. A lot of our estimates of how much water, so that estimate of you know, how much invasive trees contributed to pushing day zero forward in Cape Town, a lot of that's based on quite a series of assumptions. So we are looking into doing research to really tie these up. Sorry, there were a whole series of questions, and apologies if I'm going on too long here. Just a couple of final points I did note down. In terms of reeds in riverine systems, often the reeds are actually a sign of a very healthy riverine system. If the reeds are there, they'll be contributing to flood protection. It's complicated, as always, with these sorts of things, in that there are a few invasive reeds, so in particular Phragmites, and Arundodonax, apologies, Arundodonax. So in some cases, that conversion from what might look like a nice river that's nice and clear to something that's more like a wetland is actually good for biodiversity and good for the sorts of things that we want those wetlands to provide. Be a sink for water, and to ensure that we don't end up with flooding in seasons. And similarly, they help mitigate against drought. We are very much involved with the Centre for Biological Control at Makanda, and Sanby does get involved, not directly in biocontrol, but through discussions through then in terms of looking at agents. There is some exciting news in water hyacinth. There is a new agent, I believe, that's providing a little bit more stability in terms of control. So the original agents basically work in the tropics, and by the time you get to South Africa, they work well, but every year the plants keep coming back. The Dasinura rubiformis is very promising. It's still quite early days, but yeah, we're very hopeful it will provide the sort of level of control that we see on Acacia cyclops. I'm not sure there's a huge amount. I'd be curious to follow up on that, the amount of conflict Dasinura rubiformis has had with wattle growers. There shouldn't be a huge conflict between the utilization of Acacia Mernsi for wood and this particular agent. Though it will spread. It will be hard to prevent it spreading into farming areas. But again, as a seed, something that's preventing seed production, it's going to take a long time before the sorts of effects that we would be seeing. And the Acacia cyclops one is a good example, where it's taken maybe 20 years to really get on top of the problem with the biocontrol agent. But now we're at a sort of stage where, together with woodcutters cutting down trees and selling the firewood, creating industry, we can get to a point where we can see utilization and control in some areas where we have to go in and control, and that's been facilitated by the biocontrol. I don't know if I've missed any specific points, but I might just hand over to Dr. Zungea to add on to anything.
Thanks, Jen. I think you covered all the questions. You can come in if there's a point of clarification.
Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Phillips, I see your hand is still up. Is that a follow-up?
Sorry, no.
All right. Is it Shoni Kamel who wants to?
Yeah.
Are there issues?
Kamel. Kamel.
Thank you, Chair. I just wondered if Dr. Frans would like to just conclude. If there's anything outstanding you want to add to, Teresa?
Thank you, Carmel, and thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I think I would just like to add that on potential economic opportunities arising from the use of alien cleared biomass, Sanby, through another project on ecological infrastructure for water security, is definitely looking at those potential economic opportunities, whether it is using biomass for charcoal, for furniture and other uses. Through that project, we are working very closely with local communities on the ground to find ways in which they could perhaps derive some livelihoods from the cleared alien biomass. So I think we are definitely engaging in that. And I think the department, through its natural resource management and environmental programs branch, are also putting quite a lot of effort into that area as well. So I think it's also a fine balance between deriving the economic benefits and dealing effectively with the problematic species. However, I think where we are clearing invasives en masse, there are opportunities for using that cleared biomass. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chairperson, those are the responses. And as we have indicated, every 3 years, the reports get updated as we identify new pathways and also the state of how responses are being implemented. That's how it will be in line with the mandate that we have indicated. Back to you, Chair, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Shoni. Honorable Bryant, I see your hand is up. May I find out who's in Mkhize?
Good morning, Honorable Chair members. Annie Mkhize is from the department. I would like to add to what one of my colleagues from SANBS said in terms of the economic use, balancing the economic use and the challenge that invasive alien species pose. May I go ahead?
Okay, before that, can we check if, can we take Honorable Bryant first and then perhaps you might also need to respond to what he's going to raise. Honorable Bryant.
Thanks, Chair. Just very briefly, and thank you for the responses so far in terms of the economic opportunities. And I think we certainly don't want to, you know, create a commodity out of, you know, the ongoing use of alien vegetation. I think it's more a question in the short, whether or not there are potential economic benefits, in the same way that, you know, there are benefits for you know, clearing of indigenous species like kelp and you know, some of the others where there are byproducts and you know, value chains involved. So I do take those points. Just one very quick question, and sorry to be species specific again, but I haven't heard much mention of Port Jackson. Is Port Jackson still as much of an invasive as it was, or have the hacking efforts helped somewhat to reduce that?
Ma'am Mkhize, can you come in and then we'll see who closes the matter.
Thank you, Chair. From the side of the department, I would like to just highlight that previously we had focused and had a dedicated program that looked at the use of invasive alien species for economic benefit, as my colleague from Zanbi had indicated. However, last year we had to review the program to align it to the mandate of the department as far as the control itself, the control and the management of invasive alien species. And as such, we have now limited our focus in terms of just making sure that we deliver the biomass and that in terms of the use and the conversion to economically viable products, that's not an area that we're looking at. However, we now in that aspect partner with other departments. For example, we are in engagement with the Department of Human Settlements and also Infrastructure SA on the use of a product that came through the research and the work of the department called in biomass insulated cement for the use in the delivery of human settlements. There are other examples, but I just thought that let me highlight that in as much as the department remains committed to balance and as much as possible pursue the economic benefit versus addressing or not further encouraging the use of species that are of challenges, that pose challenges to our biodiversity, where we start and end at this point in time, according to the use or in line with the use, is basically promoting a biomass. So we deliver the biomass for others to then follow through in line with the manufacturing of economically viable products. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, on the question by Honorable Bryant, sure. Kamal, if you can indicate who will respond to that quickly.
Thank you very much. I'll ask Songhai to please come in and answer that question. Thank you, Chair.
John, would you rather respond? Is for Jackson.
With your permission, Chair, I work on, so yeah. So on in terms of Acacia Seligna or Port Jackson, yeah, it's one of these cases where the biocontrol takes quite a bit of time. It does kill trees in this case, and it reduces flowering productions. What we don't see are five-year-old or older trees anymore. You don't see massive old trees. But what you do see are areas that are 100% dense infestations, and that's not really going to change. The other point is it's got a massive seed bank of, so if you clear an area, and people might have seen this, you get a massive regrowth that covers the area. And if there's a fire in the area, it will regrow very much. So it's still a major significant challenge for control, and also a significant challenge for restoration. There's quite a lot of interesting work being done on trying to move an invaded area to a area with value for production or for biodiversity. And there's a large scale trial up at Broberg where they've been doing exactly this, trying to move from those stands with 100% acacia seligma to native vegetation or an area that's productively useful. So that is a species that is, given the nature for the biocontrol in this case, is going to continue being an issue. I think in the case of acacia, cyclops and rycrans, we might be getting to a situation where we need worry less about it, but unfortunately that's not the case for seligma.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think we're done from our side, unless if there are further questions.
No, let's close it here, Shoni. Thank you very much to Sanbi and Chairperson. In terms of the agenda, Chileka, can you kindly fly the agenda? I believe we're now going to Isimangaliso. Yeah, we are now at item number 4. Can we get the fourth, the quarterly report of 2021 financial year from the Isimangaliso Wetland Park? Is the team there led by the chairperson of anyone, DM?
Thank you very much, chairperson. The CEO is here and the chairperson of the board is also here. Can I then through you give over to the chairperson of the board just for an opening remark?
Sure.
Thank you. I am Professor Tandinzama, the chairperson of the Isimangaliso board. I would like to express my special greetings to the deputy minister, the DG and other officials from the department, colleagues from Sanbi and Isimangaliso. With me is the CEO of Isimangaliso, Mr. Sibusiso Bukhosini, and the CFO, Ms. Kamgile Mdambu. Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, I'm very pleased to report that in spite of a number of challenges, Isimangaliso was able to achieve all its 61 targets for 2021 financial year. The entity therefore scored 100% for its performance in all its programs, which is really commendable. Isimangaliso, honorable members, has four programs, those being corporate support services, biodiversity conservation, tourism and business development, and socioeconomic environment development. In each of these programs, all targets were achieved. Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee, I am also very pleased to report that Isimangaliso received an unqualified audit opinion for the 2020-2021 financial year. Honorable Chairperson, I also would like to mention that Isimangaliso is working very hard on a number of areas. I will just mention a few, starting with the maintenance of the World Heritage status of the Woodland Park. Now, this is very important because the entity has got to ensure that the ecological integrity of the park is upheld. This is done mainly through a number of park management and monitoring programs, as well as stakeholder engagements to to ensure that local communities understand the significance of biodiversity conservation and what they stand to benefit from a multi-pronged and collective conservation efforts. These engagements ensure that local communities get a sense of ownership of the park and subsequently become ambassadors of Isimangaliso. Secondly, Honorable Chairperson, I would like to mention that the other area that Isimangaliso is focusing on is its attempt to reduce its reliance on government grants. And this is done through mainly the promotion of ecotourism and focusing on the implementation of the commercialization strategy. Isimangaliso is now at an advanced stage of taking over the tourism facility operations from Ezenvelo. As we speak now, the CEO and his team are working very hard in trying to finalize the consultation processes with the employees as well as labor unions. And from the reports that I have received from the CEO, the reactions from the employees and the unions is very positive and very supportive. So we really believe that we will soon be able to implement the commercialization strategy without any problems. And I also believe that if we're really able to do this, we will be able to contribute to the financial sustainability of the entity. The third area that I would like to mention, Honorable Chairperson, is that Isimangaliso is working very hard in trying to strengthen the relationships with the communities. A number of skills at development and youth empowerment programs have been presented to ensure that local communities understand and they have the skills to benefit from the activities that are taking place within the park. The entity has also worked very hard to bring close or to strengthen the relationship with Amakhosi. I can confidently say that a number of meetings and engagements with Amakhosi and traditional and members of traditional councils have been held. And some of these were attended by board members. And of course, this is one of the attempts of trying to promote a transformation and empowering historical disadvantaged communities living in and adjacent to the park. Chairperson, I also would like to report that Isimangaliso is financially healthy. Isimangaliso has been able to generate an increase on park revenue through grants and subsidies as well as administration fees. But the CEO will then later elaborate on this one. Finally, I would like to quickly touch on the well-being of the employees. In order for Isimangaliso to continue performing at its best, as it is currently happening, it is imperative that Isimangaliso provides an environment that is conducive to optimal performance. Isimangaliso has been able to retain appropriately qualified and diverse workforce with the skills that are required to deliver on its mandate. At this point, Honorable Chairperson, I will now hand over to the CEO to take you through the presentation. Over to you, CEO, Mr. Bukosini. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Prof. A very good morning to you, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, DG, colleagues from SANBI and the Chairperson from SANBI as well. Colleagues from the department as well who are in attendance. Chairperson, our presentation will be more on the annual performance report, which includes obviously quarter four. I do know that normally you want us to present on issues where we have challenges, but as the Chairperson alluded to our performance in her opening remarks, we have achieved 100%. But be that as it may be, I will just indicate that the challenges in our presentation indicates that these are the challenges that we were facing as an entity during the course of the year. We do know the issue of the budget cuts, the fiscal constraints that we have, and we are aware of the fact that at some point, in fact, during the course of the year, we had to convert CAPEX into OPEX in order for us to be able to survive as an entity. And this is attributed to the fact that the entity, as we all know at the present moment, is mainly grant dependent, which is an issue that we are doing our level best to address, as the proof the chairperson has indicated. We also lost quite some time in terms of the restrictions that were brought about by the national lockdown, but fortunately we did have a recovery plan. And we implemented that. Many restrictions were relaxed, but not entirely removed, and it continued to impact on certain areas in terms of performance. It is on this basis that we had to adjust certain targets so that we will be able to deliver on them. Stakeholder engagement, the Prof has talked to this quite a lot. In the main, in our case, it's the traditional leaders, it's the land laymans, it's people who are abutting the park who may not necessarily be land laymans, but we have made sure that our stakeholder engagement deals with that aspect. If you look at quarter four in particular, you will see that 98% in quarter four only has been achieved, mainly because the survey report was approved, but it had to be endorsed by the board before it could be considered as finalized. It was subsequently finalized, which is why we're reporting 100%. Suspension of the academic calendar impacted on strategic partnership with the universities. HR capacity constraints, issues with employees with comorbidities, unable to work, the limitations in advertising and filling of certain posts. Interrupted access to the office building during the deep cleaning and other issues during the age of the COVID. So those are the challenges that we were working under, but nonetheless, Chairperson, as the Chairperson of the Board has correctly indicated, we managed to achieve 100% in terms of the planned targets for the financial year. Carry on. Next slide. As indicated, we had 61 targets for the duration of the entire year. Corporate services had 24, biodiversity conservation had 10, tourism and business development had 14, socio-economic environment and development had 13. And all of these targets were achieved because of the close and regular monitoring of the performance of the executive managers on monthly and quarterly basis in terms of the monthly plans as well as the quarterly plans. The next slide. The next slide. The chairperson did indicate the issue of the audit outcome. Chairperson, to say that we've obtained an unqualified audit opinion. We wanted to surprise you as the portfolio committee with clean administration, but unfortunately, there is a contract which we inherited, which still presents a couple of challenges, but that contract fortunately is coming to an end. So we landed to unqualified, but generally, I think our financials are looking very good. In terms of expenditure, we're sitting at 107. That's way above the 95% which was planned. And we are paying our creditors within the 30 days as per the requirement by the Public Finance Management Act. The next slide. Next slide, please. Yes, thank you. The average number of days trap data collection, 60 days, and we've advanced quite significantly. We've got 20 days. This is mainly because of the collaboration and continued engagement, working with our debtors in the main, finding solutions with them as opposed to leaving them in the dark, especially during these times. percentage of compliance, key statutory requirements, 100%, as well as the implementation of procurement is sitting at 100%. Thank you. Next slide. BAU spend, we had planned to, on the 2021, 60% and progress as at the date of reporting was also sitting at 60% as well. I must say here, Chairperson, that as we talk about the 60% here, we're talking about 233 SMMEs who benefited or who are participating in the infrastructure projects as we received funding in terms of presidential stimulus, infrastructure refurbishment, and so on. And the majority of those people are people who are residing either within or abutting or adjacent to the park. And this has really gone a long way in terms of rebuilding and reconnecting Ismangaliso as an entity with the stakeholders in general. So I thought I should just mention that. And the secondly, the issue that we are an entity which is situated in both King Cetshwayo as well as Umkhanyakude districts that are highly characterized by the three social ills, which is unemployment, poverty, as well as inequality. So these opportunities have also immensely contributed in addressing or denting that from the side of Ismangaliso to contribute to the National Development Plan. Thank you. The next slide. The turnover, we have always promised to be an employer of choice. And as a result of that, these are the results, only 2%. In terms of the turnover, in terms of the percentage vacancy rate, it's 2%. Workplace skills plan submitted to CETA, that is in progress. It will be submitted within the prescribed time. So that is also going to be done, Chairperson, because it was not a target for that particular quota. Next slide. Implementation of the workplace skills plan. We talked about 25% and we're sitting at 43%, target way over achieved. Performance contracts, they have all been concluded, signed, and filed accordingly. The mid-year annual performance assessments for all executive managers have also been finalized, but we, because of the performance management and monitoring system that we have, we also do take this to other lower level employees just to make sure that they also have that level of accountability as well within the entity. Next slide. Development and approval of the plan, the equity plan, it's there. The five-year employment equity plan is now available. We have no challenge issues there. Annual target on the implementation of the equity plan target is also, the target has been achieved. Female employees, researchers engaged during the financial year. In 2020, 10 employees employed. So the female employees engaged during the financial year in 2020 that I indicated permanent position. Sorry, it's we've got the CFO. And we also have the environmental monitors and rhino monitors, 13 as well. So total female employees in general is 23. I do know that for quite some time, we've been a boys choir, but we've worked very, very hard to attend to this as per the advice and recommendation from the members of the portfolio committee. Employee engagement survey findings reported and attended to. Yes, this has been done. This has been attended to. One of the issues that was raised by the employees was that they did not have a provident or pension fund, the medical aid. To date, I'm happy to report that all employees do now have this fund as well as the medical aid. And it has been a big achievement. And it also helped a lot in terms of creating or motivating even the employees in the entity. The next slide. The occupational health and safety assessment, we've finalized or conducted all the assessments. Next slide. ICT governance framework, it has been reviewed as well as approved, and the system business, it's as we reported earlier on that we will be implementing a financial management system. Now it is currently in place and we are now using it. Next slide. It's the independent research, 50%, and we got 79%. And the PAC monitoring program, we've got reports completed for the quarter. And so that has been achieved. The conservation and transformation tourism plans approved 2, and we achieved 2. Stakeholder engagements, we planned for 60, we managed to achieve 87. Number of stakeholder relations survey, 1 conducted. Next slide. Next slide. It's program 2, which is biodiversity conservation. Land audit survey finalized, and we've indeed finalized that. The meetings that we have as per the institutional arrangements that we have with SMBLO KZN Wildlife, we planned for 4, but we had 5 meetings. And members of the portfolio committee, I'm also happy to report that the strong relationship between Ismail Aliso and SMBLO is back on track. We are now working together as opposed to the last time where there were issues between the two entities. Hence the progress that the chairperson of the board was reporting. Environmental audits conducted, we conducted 12 just to make sure that our concessions are behaving in their respective areas. Environmental monitors 120, we have 130 because we are also supporting other areas as administrators on behalf of the department. Next slide. Hectares of invasive plants, 30,000 hectares was planned. We achieved 56, and this is due to the additional budget that we received from the department. Thank you very much. It also contributed in ensuring that there is employment opportunities as well as business opportunities for the neighboring communities. Likewise, in the rehabilitation of the wetlands in terms of removing the sand so that our wetlands go back to effective functionality. 2,000 cubic meters, we managed to get 3,345, way more than that. Number of kilometers is 320 in the coastline because of the addition of the estuary, and we managed to achieve that. So that is 200 plus 100 in that context. Thank you. Yes, next slide. Applications for development in the buffer zone, 100%. We've responded to those, and we comment. We don't provide or grant any authority, because the buffer zone has not been gazetted as yet. Unauthorized developments and activities, we've attended to all issues, although some are in progress, but we are dealing with some of those issues, especially because most of them are historical and we are doing our level best to deal with them. Hectares banned in controlled banning areas, 1,250, we achieved way above by 1,458 hectares. Next slide. Next slide, please. This is tourism and business development. The 5-year communication and marketing strategy. That strategy has been developed and approved by the board. Collaterals developed as marketing tools. 3, we managed to achieve 6. And the annual visitor market research completed 1, and we achieved 1. Next slide, please. editorials published, broadcasted 6, but we managed to achieve 20. We're trying to move into the digital marketing with media activation because we want to be aligned with the fourth and oncoming fifth industrial revolution. Number of media junkets hosted, 16, and we had planned 4. Number of digital engagements, we planned 3, we achieved 6. Next slide. Special events to promote the park as a destination of choice, 3, we achieved 6. News flashes, 20, we achieved 20. Social media posts, 500, we achieved 568. Next slide. Paid visitors, we wanted to have 66,250. We had 161,876. When other beaches were closed, Ismailiso beaches were not all closed due to controlled access and carrying capacity limit, and visitors opted to visit us. And interestingly, we also learned that through the marketing and the branding and many other things that we did, we attracted a lot of domestic tourists as well, hence the increased number of paying visitors. Revenue to the park, we had planned 6,250,000, but we managed to achieve 11,317,000 because of that. So these are the dividends of the initial activities that you saw in the previous slides. Tourism and commercialization strategy developed. This is, the plan was approved. And as the professor was indicating earlier on, we are implementing it as we speak. Next slide. The 5-year park infrastructure plan approved and implemented. This has been developed, and also it has also been implemented. If you come to Ismailiso, you will see a lot of changes. You come to Charters Creek, now you can drive from N2 straight up to the lake on the tar road, and a lot of other infrastructure improvements has taken place. Accommodation and other infrastructure developments, the refurbishment of certain investment assets has also been taken care of due to additional funding that we received from the department. Percentage of park estate maintenance plan, we've also attended to these as well. Next slide. Here we are talking to the last program. The full-time equivalent jobs, 150, but we exceeded through those programs that I talked about earlier on. We managed to get 343. Now the total working days, January to March, was 25,488. And as you can see, the other figures below. The number of beneficiaries who successfully completed accredited training, we had planned 70, we managed to achieve 877. Number of beneficiaries who successfully completed non-accredited training is 1,273. I must also mention that we worked collaboratively here with Wild Trust through their program under Wild Oceans. And we have also achieved way more than this, because there are people who are now accredited in terms of plumbing, electricians, painting, and so on. And Wild Oceans, through Oceans Alive program, managed to give them the working toolkits. So they are also now in a position to go outside and work or get work for other private or even public institutions as well. Can next slide. Number of people participating in skills development programs, we had planned 100, we achieved 285. Number of people participating in local economic development programs, we had planned 50, we achieved 51. Number of people participating in rural enterprise program, we had 100, we planned 100, and we achieved 114. Next slide. First years receiving bursaries, 10 and 10 indeed received those bursaries. Bursary students who passed 75% is what we planned. They surprised us. We got 83%. Number of non-paying entries to the park, we had 900. As I indicated, people developed an interest to visit our park because of the improved infrastructure. Progress was 132,032. And we do break down in terms of each quarter how the numbers have been doing. Next slide. Number of schools visited by ourselves is 30, and we manage 30. Youth Rhino ambassadors, 20 and 27 is what we achieved. Number of leadership structures participating in environmental awareness and capacity building, we had planned to have one, and we managed to achieve one. And events celebrating key environmental calendar days, one, and we achieved one. That then brings us to 100%. So that's how, and that's where our 100% comes from, Chairperson. Maybe just to add, before we go to the financial performance report, is the issue that the cheetah that we reported that we had reintroduced in Kuza Game Reserve, they're doing very well, and they're doing very well. The rhino also, we were unfortunate because we were having a clean record of no rhino poaching, but we had one rhino that was poached. And we managed also through, once again, the developed relations with our communities to intercept a potential rhino poaching incident in Mkuza as well. And all good thanks to our communities who alerted us to this effect. And indeed, it was a successful situation there. I will now, Chairperson, hand over to our Chief Financial Officer to present to you the financial performance of the entity as at the end of the financial year. Thank you very much. And these are audited financial statements. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, CEO, for the opportunity. And thank you to the Chairperson, and greetings to honorable members. In terms of the financial position of the entity, we have increased our asset base by 125 million. As the CEO has mentioned, that some of our infrastructure has been upgraded, so that led to increase in our asset. And also in terms of the cash and cash equivalent, it decreased because we had to pay. From last year to now, we had to pay our service providers. But in terms of overall, in terms of saying, are we cash backed? Our grants are cash backed, and we, in terms of liquidity, we are liquid. We are 1.5:1, so we are able to meet our obligation when we are required to do so. So can we also go to the next slide? As I mentioned, that we are the entity is the challenge that we are facing now is that the entity is 95% dependent on grants, and we saw it as a concern. Hence, the board has given us as management to develop a financial sustainability plan to see how we can have other venues or other avenues to create revenue and enhance the one that we have. So we are busy with the financial sustainability plan, as the chairperson of the board has mentioned. In terms of the surplus in the financial year, it increased by 147 million. This is due to our grants that we received that were not of a capital nature, which we were not included. One of them is that we receive 73 million as part of the presidential stimulus, and of that amount, we use most of it to maintain our infrastructure, to maintain our road that we have in the park. So as at 31st of March, we had an unrestricted cash of 126 million, and which, as I mentioned, that we had unspent conditional grant of 70 million, which at that point is that we were liquid in terms of saying we can, if the department says return our unconditional grant, we were going to be able to do so. So I would like us to go to the next slide, please. So in terms of the financial position, as we have mentioned, that our park revenue had, because of COVID, when you compare with last financial year, which is 2020, to now, it has decreased from 21 million to 11 million. But we began to recover towards the end of the financial year, when there was a release in the levels. So in terms of the total revenue that we generate as the park, comparing from last year, where we had a full year and we were not having COVID, it was a bit better, because last year we had 34 million, and in the 2021 financial year, it was 29 million. But also, we should also state that if you look at our grants, this was as a result that we had grants that we received. So if it was not that we have received a presidential stimulus to back up or additional funding in terms of monitors, wouldn't be at the position where we had so much surplus. So in terms of the personal cost, our personal cost was maintained, and for project costs, this relate to presidential stimulus, your environmental monitors, that we increase more from the anticipated revenue. So in an overall, we were sitting at 146 million surplus. Then can we also go to the next slide? As I mentioned, that the entity will receive an additional, in terms of the grants, we receive about 62 million or 73 million of the presidential stimulus. Of that 73, we had spent, as at fourth quarter, we had spent 62 million from the presidential stimulus. And of those additional grants, our admin fees and management fees, which we take as a percentage, were increased by 4.8 and 2.2 million from the previous financial year. Can we go to the next slide, please, where we just compare, in this slide in particular, we just compare that what was our budget. If we look at the approved budget in the beginning of the year, we had said we will, in terms of revenue, we're expecting to receive about 57 million. But because of COVID, we had to adjust our budget by 23 million, which we reduced it to, when we reduced it to 23, that gave us 34 million. And of the 34 million, we were able to achieve 29 million, which led us with a small difference of about 5.4 million. And in terms of the grants, this is where we got some help, because our grants, as per the anticipation, was that we were expecting 177 million, but with the adjustment, it was adjusted upwards, where we receive about and recognize 452 million overall in terms of the grants. So in a total revenue, from what we had anticipated, 235, but we ended up having 495 million as part of the grants that we received. So in terms of the expenditure, all our expenditures were within what we expected to do, except where we had received additional funding, because we received additional funding for, in particular for presidential stimulus, we received it after the adjustment. The 73 million was received after we've done our adjustment, but hence the expenditure had to be incurred. So you'll see some of the areas that you have an over expenditure, like for instance in maintenance. It was in particular because at the time when we received funding, it was after we've done our adjustment of budget. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CFO.
Thank you, CFO, and thank you very much, Chairperson, over to you. Thank you. That was our presentation.
Thank you very much, Isman Gali. So, honorable members, perhaps we should take first this opportunity before we ask questions to give them a round of applause. I really think they deserve it. 100% achievement. It's something to write home about. Congratulations.
They are employed to achieve 100%. You don't load a fish for swimming.
All right. Before we call them fish, Honorable Paulson, can we take hands? I see the hand of Honorable Phillips. Are there other hands? Honorable Bryant? Fish? All right, in that order, Honorable Phillips.
Thank you so much, Chair. I'd like to thank everyone for the presentation. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank the CEO for the relationship that he's actually built up with the people in St. Lucia. They are absolutely thrilled with the change in attitude from Isimangaliso previously under the previous CEO and now under the new CEO. So I'd really like to congratulate you on that. I think you really have turned the relationship around with the local people. I have although got a couple of very concerning questions. The first question concerns your admin block that we were taken to see when we were there in January. The cost of that admin block works up to something like 23,000 rand a square meter, where the average building cost at the moment is between 8 and 13,000 rand a square meter. When I put the parliamentary question in, the reply was, oh, but you had to break some areas down and it's difficult to get material there. Well, I've actually approached a number of quantity surveyors in St. Lucia, and they have assured me that there is no way that the cost should have been more than 13,000 rand a square meter, definitely not up to 23,000 rand a square meter. And I see there's no mention whatsoever made in the report about that block. I did ask for a bill of quantities, which we've never received. And then I've also been informed that the administration block, although it was just about at roof height when we were there in January, still has not been completed. And there are a number of issues surrounding the contractor, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that is a issue that has occurred, and it was not presented to us at all. So I'd like, if possible, for some information on that. Then on page 16, let's go to page 9 first. Okay, you have a fourth quarter. You've achieved 43%, but it's green and on target. So I just want to know how 43% is an achieved target in the fourth quarter. It should be closer to 100%. Then on page 16 for the wetland rehab, I'd like to know what kind of rehab has been done and where the sand has been removed and where the sand has been removed. Because I know that there is still a huge issue with silting and with the reeds growing in the silt. Then on page 27, I'm very concerned about that KPI of 900 and then reaching 132,000. You know, I can understand if you underestimated by 10%, but that underestimation is absolutely horrendous. And if the other figures that we've been presented with are, if that is an indication of the KPI set compared to what can actually be achieved, then I think that your KPIs set are definitely far, far too soft. and they need to be re-looked at, and a realistic KPIs need to be set. That is all for me at the moment. That's all for me at the moment. There was one more question. The question was about the fishing for the small scale fishermen. I didn't hear much report back about that, and I know that there is a lot of unhappiness about that. So it is an issue that you are encountering, and I do think it is something that the committee should be made aware of. Thank you very much.
Honorable Bryant.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable Phillips has covered a lot of ground. I've just got one question remaining, which is around the unqualified audit. If we can just get a bit more detail as to the reasons behind the unqualified audit, and how that's going to be rectified, hopefully going forward. Thanks.
May I check if there are any other hands on the presentation, honourable members? CEO, I know that there are a number of scientists that are appointed to do some work there. It's Mangaliso. Do you want to take us through on the progress that they've made thus far? Are they still continuing? Are there hiccups? Are there any challenges perhaps that you are encountering? Thank you very much. Over to you for responses.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can get assistance from admin in terms of the slides that Honorable Phillips was referring to. Thank you very much, Honorable Phillips, for the words of encouragement in regards to working with stakeholders. It's not only in St. Lucia though, it's all the way from Mapelane right up to Kosi Bay, and this is exactly what we're trying to do. With regards to the admin block costs that you are referring to, I would like to get a qualified information on the basis of that, because as you correctly indicated, this is a quantity surveyor matter, and we will really attend to that. I'm surprised that you did not get the response in this regard, because I do remember that you questioned this and we did respond to this, but we will check and come back to you again on this matter with more information, because I think we provided quite a detailed analysis of this and what is happening. With regards to the building, you will recall that this building, in fact, and many other projects were funded maybe 3-4 years even before my arrival, but they only got adjudicated in 2018. That was about 3-4 years after. And there has been a number of challenges with regards to the price increases. And even during the COVID era, there has been also that situation. So I think what we are picking up and which we are trying to address with the CFO and their department is to indicate that the budget which was allocated was outdated and could not finish that building. And therefore, given the current fiscal situation, we are looking at alternative means of making sure that we finalize the construction on this. And we will update you on progress as we go in as far as this building is concerned. But as you correctly indicated, it is quite at an advanced stage. A lot of material is on site. We just need to finalize it and make sure that we've got enough funds to cover the difference, which is a shortfall from what was planned many, many years ago. In terms of slide 9, you are talking about 43% the target there was 25% in terms of percentage of implementation of the workplace skills plan. We were supposed to achieve or to implement 25% of that, and we achieved 43% as opposed to that. I'm not too sure whether if you can just help me again, what exactly is the question there, Honorable Phillips?
Thank you. So, my question was, why only 25% of the implementation of a skills plan? You more than exceeded it. So once again, I'm seeing a target that was obviously very, very soft. You know, I would have thought that you should have aimed for 100% and got 43% and then came back and said, well, you're going to work harder next year to make sure that you do the 100%. But not coming up with a very soft target, knowing that it's going to be easily achievable. It concerns me that your targets are generally very, very soft.
Okay. No, thank you for that. I think what one can do is to check with HR because this is a the workplace skills plan is a compliance issue, and I'm sure there must be guidelines that are guiding us in this regard. But we will revert to you with regards to that target in particular. In terms of page 16, you were asking about the wetland rehabilitation. What happens here is that we have a number of wetlands here, and because I'm sure you are aware that St. Lucia or Ismangaliso in general is a Ramsar site, is a very wet area in general. But because of historical practices, forestry, and even before that, there were a number of activities which were really untowards in terms of this area functioning fully as wetland. So if you look at the target that we have there of the wetland rehabilitation, which is about 2,000 cubic meter, what we've done there is we remove the heaps and flatten them on the ground. And usually in areas where we flatten them, there are no rivers, but it's just areas so that they are level. Because what normally happens, those heaps block the movement of water from one side to another side. And therefore, we want our approach in terms of the wetland rehabilitation is to flatten those heaps so that it's a level area. If you come to St. Lucia now, for instance, you will see that the whole area in the east, on the eastern side of the park is very wet. It's because water now is being able to move from one side to the other side, thus creating or bringing back that original functionality of the area as a Ramsar site. The other one that you talked about is a KPI of 200. It's on page 27, as you said.
The KPI was 900, sir.
Yes, the KPI there was 900. Let me just see that, page 27. It's the number of non-paying entries to the park. It's 900, and we achieved more. Honorable Phillips, you'll recall that because of the COVID situation, we had to revise a number of targets quite significantly, and in fact down, because our understanding here was that we were not, and it's a time of uncertainty. We were not too sure whether restrictions were going to ease or not ease with the time progressing. There were no prospects of that. It was not clear. And the best thing was to be a little bit conservative. So we then took a decision that we must reduce and reduce it to 900. And this was presented to the department, and the department presented the revised targets to cabinet so that we could all, and the reasons for the reduction were also mentioned and considered. It is on those bases that we reduced, because it was not clear, and it is still not clear even today, because Yes, we are improving a little bit, but you can also see that something can happen in the next month or so and things can change for the worse. So it's times of uncertainty, and the best thing is to be conservative, just like if you are budgeting, you do the same. So that is why we're sitting there. In terms of the question with the fishing from small-scale fishermen, I am not too sure, and this is very interesting, and I'm happy that you're asking this question, Honorable Phillips, because I'm currently, exactly for the same reason, and that there is that perception, I am currently engaging with these fishermen, and I can just say that a couple of weeks I met with one person who is a leader of these fishermen in the Kosi Bay, trying to find out exactly what is the issue. It did appear to me that in the main, the issue is more historic in a sense that they were not being consulted, not being engaged, not being recognized. But now, as you probably have seen in the symposium that we held with scientists, fishermen were also involved. In the people and parks, they are now involved. And this perception may be a perception of the past. The issue that we had, that we still have though, is in the area in False Bay, Gwanibela area. I'm sure you remember the incident where someone was shot. But the main challenge there is the fact that most of the fishermen are still, and with addressing that matter with the local leadership, are still using gill netting. And that is not in line with how they should be operating. But again, there's also an issue of other people who are not necessarily in that category, who are representing themselves as that category. So it's an issue that we're dealing with, and I am currently in close contact with the leaders so that we can get to the ground, I mean, to the core of this whole issue. But I can assure you that we are doing our level best to improve this relationship, because it has been a relationship that was tarnished and tainted for a very long time. Honorable Bryant, the unqualified audit opinion. It's an unqualified audit opinion, as I explained, which is next to a very good audit opinion. Obviously, the very good audit opinion will be the clean administration. So we've got very few matters that we are dealing with. And I did indicate, and those few matters that I'm talking to relate to the historic contract, the Katanga contract, which was entered into by the entity a couple of years before we came in as this administration. Unfortunately, it has certain issues within the contract, which Audit AG raised for us to attend to. But now we do have a plan to deal with those issues, and AG is comfortable that the contract is coming to an end in the next financial year. Therefore, the matter is going to be resolved as we go forward. So that is where the unqualified audit comes from. But generally, if you look at our report, it's a significant improvement from what we had in the last financial year. Thank you very much. Honorable Modise, thank you very much for the question. I nearly forgot it. The issue of the panel of scientists. They were introduced to us by the Honorable Minister, and their scope was clearly explained to us. We have started engaging with them. In fact, from that meeting, when the Minister introduced them to us, they requested certain information, which was made available to them. They have subsequently been here in our park to conduct a field visit, but also engage with us. I do know that they are planning to meet with other stakeholders as well. So we've taken them on site to see exactly what we're talking about.
and they have themselves witnessed what we were talking about and what I presented some time ago in terms of why the system was not going to breach naturally, why it was going to be difficult for that. And two, we presented to them issues around data, which was supposed to be made available to us by a scientist who was appointed by the World Bank jury for the GEF5 project, who did not submit or present that information, unfortunately. We also presented to them now the data that we have started collecting and how the system is performing. And they did the transit walk, so they walked the park and they saw for themselves. I am sure you will hear from them as soon as they conclude the report. But so far, we do not have any concerns from them, and we can't raise any concerns from our end as well. So the work is progressing very well. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you, CEO. Honourable Philip, I see your hand is up. Is it an old one? Follow up.
Thanks, Chair. It's actually just a follow up, if I may.
Sure. Proceed.
Thank you so much. Yes, the shooting was one of my concerns, because I have been made aware that there is some poaching happening there. And then there are some people who think they are legal fishermen, but who are being accused of poaching. And it does seem to be a very complicated situation. So I'm really glad to hear that it is being addressed and that attention is being paid to it. So thank you so much. And perhaps if you could keep us up to date with what is happening there with the fishermen, that would be really great. I would appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Phillips. I take it that is the end of the questions and comments on the Isimang Galiso presentation. Chileka, can you fly to the agenda? I think we are doing relatively well with time. Our time was shortened by the fish that is just presented.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, CEO. Thank you very much, Prof. Honorable Paulson says we must not applaud for swimming. Chileka, can you fly the agenda, please? Ms. Madubela. Hey, I don't know where is my agenda. All right, honorable members, what is the next item? Please help, be helped today. What is the next item on the agenda?
Disclosure, Chairperson. Next item.
Oh.
You are back, sister.
Yes, Mr. Matisse, sorry, I was on a call.
Oh, okay. No, I had requested that you must just fly the agenda, but it would seem we did.
Okay, I can fly it now. There we go.
It would seem we did very well.
Yes.
We were scheduled to actually finish at 1:05. It's now 11:40. We are early with about 1 hour, 20 minutes or something. But I want to take this opportunity to thank all of you honorable members and people who take keen interest in the developments and the work of the entities of the Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries in its entirety, and the work that we do on a daily basis. Welcome back. I know we still have to adjust after electioneering and get used to a busy schedule of parliament. DM, I want to borrow you 2 minutes just to make your closing remark, and then we can close.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to honorable members. We don't have anything to say, but we are happy when members of parliament are happy. I know that the department, next time when we come to the portfolio committee with the department's performance for the financial year, it's not going to be like this because the department hasn't performed as expected by the portfolio committee. But I just want also to congratulate Isimangaliso and the entire team for the work well done. I'm sure that's one of the reasons why we finished so early, Chairperson, because Isimangaliso made us actually very happy with their annual performance. Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the members.
Thank you very much, Honorable TM. Honorable Bryant, is it the old hand?
It's a new hand, Chairperson. Just a very brief point before you adjourn, if I may. I think this morning we experienced again, you know, challenges with the ongoing issues relating to load shedding and communication challenges, cameras going on and off, all sorts of things. I don't know if it's possible, and I know you are the acting chairperson at the moment, but if it's possible for us to make an appeal to the secretariat that we urgently consider having physical meetings again. These hybrid meetings or the virtual meetings from a convenience perspective may make sense on some level, but it is certainly a lot more difficult to properly interact and get the most out on a virtual session. So I just hope that perhaps if in the coming sittings of Parliament next year, as early as possible, we can start to move back to physical sittings. Thank you.
All right. No, we will look into that, Honorable Bryant, and certainly we'll come back to the committee for consideration and more recommendations on what needs to happen. But I think I'm only acting for this meeting. Borrowed power might be leaving next week. So I'll certainly process it through the office of the speaker and others, so that we check how soon can we reconverge back in Cape Town. Honorable members, with that being said, let me take this opportunity to thank you for borrowing me this time. Thank you very much to the entities that made presentations. Sunbe, we are expecting more presentation. And more improvements, and on the department and other entities that are still coming, we will meet next week on the 16th of November. With that being said, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much again.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.